any given Monday.
The weekend's over, the final sirens have sounded. We've got our winners and losers, our champs and our chumps.
Any given Monday.
So now it's time to look back and evaluate all the games, dramas and controversies from the best sport in the world.
Any given Monday.
So forget about those back-to-work blues and settle in for this week's edition of
Any Given Monday.
Please join your hosts, author and historian Dr. Dan Eddy, and local football expert Owen Carter, as they're joined by special weekly guests for your most comprehensive wrap of the weekend's action. Let's get to it.
Any Given Monday.
Well, hello and welcome to our grand final review edition of Any Given Monday. Another season's gone, and what a season it was, and a lot to talk about, obviously. But thank God we got to the finish line, and an amazing ending to an amazing season. And Dr. Dan Eddy here with you, along with my good mate Owen Carter. How are you, mate?
I feel exhausted. It feels like it's taken a lifetime to get to this point, but finally got there, and Richmond premiers again, eh?
Yeah, a bit of same old in the season of very much different to anything we've seen before. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. We've got a special guest shortly. I guess one quick one with you, O, on last night is how'd you go? Did you get through till 10:30-ish when the medals were presented?
It was a bit of a different experience, wasn't it? Got through okay. I don't think I would have had too many issues, but I think, like yourself, I'm probably a bit of a traditionalist, and we'll assume it'll go probably to the status quo when we go back to a bit of normality next year, but assuming we do anyway. But we'll watch that space and see what happens there.
We'll discuss that more with our guest shortly. We'll bring him in because a good mate's been on a few times this year. Hawthorn champion, dual best and fairest winner, premiership player in 1971. Knows a thing or two about grand final day. Bob Keddie, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Hello, how are you, Ed?
Good, mate. Good to have you with us again. I hope you had a sleep in this morning and you're bright and bubbly after a late night.
No. Well, I must admit, I didn't wait to see the medallion presentation. I think I was a little bit gassed out after the pre-match, the half-time, and then the second half, which was really quite spectacular on the part of Richmond.
Yeah, for sure. I put the word out there on the social media today, just saying, look, I hated the time that it was played, and I'm glad we've done the experiment because it gets talked about every year, but I just hope it goes back to what we know best, which is it just works so well in the afternoon when you think of grand final brekkies, and then you put your barbecue on and whatever, and then you settle in and you're good to go for 2 o'clock or whatever, and then you're done by 5:30 or whatever it might be, and then you can actually go and have a kick in the backyard and emulate your heroes, or you can go out and have a few drinks with mates and enjoy it, or your kids can actually sit and watch the whole game. My son Ernie got to he was up and about all day. He was pretty full on all day, young Ern, and then it got to just before the national anthem, and suddenly I feel his head on my shoulder and he's passed out. So if he's the sort of thing the AFL wants to see going forward, then I guess they'll keep it at night. But if they want kids to actually sit back and enjoy it and emulate their heroes and want to go on and play league footy, then I reckon we need to take it back to a day game.
Certainly. I agree with you, Dan, and I just felt that it going that late into the night, if the grand final was to come back to Melbourne, which I think we all expect it will.
Yep.
And you have 100,000 people. The finish at 10:30, I believe, puts forward a lot of logistical problems. I'm concerned that if it's late at night, that during the course of the day, the celebrations or the anticipation might start at about midday. And we already have enough issues with alcohol in society. And I just hate to see it, you know, the brand diminished by, you know, social influences.
Yep.
That's the fact that, you know, it for the viewing audience, I have to admit that it wasn't as exciting for me to watch had it not been, well, if it had been at 2:30, you get that build up and you have the energy to become excited about what you're about to see. The anticipation is high.
Yep.
And I think the night episode was a very good experiment. And, you know, congratulations to the AFL for getting that done. But I believe that people who played the game would prefer a day grand final.
Yeah, the traditionalists especially, and I think Dan and I both sort of fall into that category. What's the most important question is, does the MCG turf make its way back to Victoria, or does it stay at the Gabba?
Well, I know, Dan, I don't know what page you've been on Facebook or eBay or whatever, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're selling clumps of it.
Yeah, I would agree, actually. Yeah, that's probably why they did it. Because it got no mention during the game. It wasn't irrelevant. It was just near the bench somewhere, I think. It was a bit of a joke during the week. It's one of the biggest jokes of all time, I think. Boys, what did you make of the entertainment side of things? I mean, I just one comment on the entertainment. I reckon that as Australians, we love to sort of take the piss out of things. And let's be honest, the only two entertainment things that we've seen in Grand Final Day that we still talk about years later is Angry Anderson and Meat Loaf. We don't talk about any of the good ones. So it's, we're not the America where we need to have Michael Jackson or U2 or someone playing at halftime. It's not like that. We don't need that. We're there for the game. And I think that gets lost a bit by the current administration trying to probably make it too Americanized, because I don't think we care that much other than a bit of a laugh. And if there is some good tunes, we bop our head and it's good fun, but then quick, get us back to the game. I mean, what do you think, Bob, about the entertainment?
I think, with all due respect, that the pre-game with a guy in a black outfit almost swallowing the microphone with his head down looking at his feet, I couldn't understand one word that he allegedly sang. That to me, it wasn't farcical, because I know that he would have been doing his best. But really, we can do better than that. I think the fireworks and the lighting displays were fantastic. But once again, you know, this is a grand final, and you know, you can have all the hoo-ha before the game, during the day, after the game, and I listened to the comments from the players from both sides, and they this morning were saying that they had to go to bed a lot earlier than they would normally do. and given the fact that they're the entertainers, they're the ones who put their bodies on the line, and by gee, the first quarter, they really put their bodies on the line.
They did. Sorry,
I think
mate.
We need to think a little bit about them as well, and their club, the winning club, their celebrations.
Yeah, I agree. And I noticed Trent Cotchin come out today and said, all good, great experience, but let's get it back to a day one next year. And he's played in a few now, so he knows a thing or two about what works. Oh, what was your thoughts on the entertainment, mate?
Yeah, the very, very beginning of when they opened up pre-game was a bit interesting. Not sure the DMAs, which I think was the band that Bob's referring to, is not necessarily the right choice for what they were going for. But then you move into something like the Wolf Mother, which is a bit more upbeat and rocky, which is what you'd probably be more looking for. I didn't mind that too much. And I sort of fall into the category that I'm there for the game and not the entertainment, and it is starting to become a bit Americanized as well. The I think the problem is you get these focus groups in, which I no doubt AFL do, and go, all right, we've interviewed 100 people, they've all said this, so that's a very small snapshot of what everyone wants. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, you can't please everyone, and they'll try and trial and error to what they see fit, I guess. And yeah, I think if in years gone past where they've kept the entertainment to someone pretty solid, generally Australian, pretty much rings true, I think. Like years where they've had Hunters and Collectors, and not necessarily Angry Anderson as such. That's popular for all the wrong reasons. But yeah, guys like that, and getting blokes like Mike Brady and singing in all the classic songs as well, I think that's important as well. And yeah, I'm definitely there for the footy and not so much the entertainment.
Yeah, me too. And Shepherd were great at halftime. Again, they probably would have been great during the day. The lights were fantastic at halftime, and it looked great. But yeah, whether that means we need to have it at night anymore, I'm not sure. I think they would have got the crowd tapping their toes even if it was daytime. Bob, 89 grand final stands out for one of the great openings to a game, and then it was just a great game afterwards. The opening minutes of the 2020 grand final were just carnage. I mean, did you find yourself sort of thinking, what is happening? What's going on?
Well, when Cochin tackled Ablett, you know, it was a fair tackle, but in a grand final, you tackle to stop any use of the ball. And when Ablett grabbed his shoulder, it really took, I think it took the sting out of a lot of the Geelong players. And the Geelong went into this game as, well, I believe they went in as sentimental favourites.
Yep.
Because of Ablett being his last game, and also because of Dangerfield playing in his first grand final. So I have to ask the question as to why Ablett came back onto the ground when he couldn't tackle. So he was purely, and I thought he did pretty well under the circumstances.
Yeah, for sure.
But Dangerfield, Patrick, didn't have much influence on the game at all after he collected Vlosten. And, you know, he got off. And I believe that, you know, that was fair. I don't think he is a person who would deliberately do that. But I think it took the sting out of him as well. He was more concerned about Vlosten. And I think it took a lot away from his contribution, because he was pumped. He was ready to go. This was going to be his grand final. And all of a sudden, he just, you know, he just didn't show the energy and the body language that you normally see from him.
Nah, I reckon he'll be having a few nightmares about the fact that the one game he probably did want to play well, and it didn't happen in the end. But also in that first quarter, there was, you know, idiot streakers that ran onto the ground. It just added to the, I know we don't want to even give them any airtime, but just the fact that it was all happening all in this space of 10 or 15 minutes, it was just like, what is going to happen next? You know, it was just chaos. Oh, what did you make of that opening term?
Oh, I saw once the play went down, and you can see a couple of blokes pinned down in the pocket. What the bloody hell is going on here? That turns out there's pitch invaders. So yeah, like the first initial reaction I had was bloody idiots. I hope they get lengthy bans, and yeah. I'm sure they've got a nice little fine to go on top of that. The problem is they get people to pull in money to pay those fines, so that's the only reason why they do it in the first place. So yeah, and it wasn't really timed well as such. I mean, you don't do it during the middle of bloody play anymore. You wait for some sort of break or some description to do it if you're going to do it.
But at least watch out the whole game. Don't do it in the first 10 minutes.
The bottom line, Dan and Owen, is that those two blokes will get life banned.
Hopefully.
It won't be 10 years. It'll be a life ban. They won't be allowed to go to any grand final or, for that matter, any AFL game, because this was the big dance, and you don't intrude on the AFL's arena, and when there is play going on. That's one of the reasons I reference alcohol. You know, these guys, it was either a bet or they were just plain stupid. But we don't need that to happen. And I think people get a surprise as to the extent of their ban.
Yeah, and I hope it gets made public, and I wouldn't even mind naming and shaming them, because you'd think with the COVID situation and the seriousness of it, there's another thing that gets lumped on them as well, is the fact that there's a punishment for that side of things too. So hopefully it's a very hefty punishment, but it's not quite as... We had big Wow Jones on last week, and he was there in 82 when Helen D'Amico ran on the ground without much clothing on at all. So times have changed a bit since then. We sort of let her almost walk her way off and walk around the crowd as a hero. It's very different times now. But there was actually a streaker in, I think it was 89 as well, but she ran on, and the game was so intense that no one really noticed. She sort of just ran on and ran off and got away with it. But with this one, yeah, it just added to the drama though, didn't it? It was just insane. So in that first term, Cats.
Sorry, I'm showing Dan something. I've actually found the guys that were involved, so it was all pre-planned. I'm not sure whether I should actually name them or not, just to give them a free plug.
Yeah, right. So they've obviously got someone who's paid for them to do it. So that gives you a reason to double come down on them. We won't go into them anymore, but just sort of added up to everything else that was happening in that opening term, which seemed to go forever, but it was just captivating viewing. You just had to keep watching, and unbelievable stuff. And but the thing was, Bob, Richmond kicked those first couple of goals after all that, and you go, oh, okay, they've settled in. And Geelong, as you say, maybe it did rattle them a bit. And then as the quarter went on, the Cats started to just work their way back into the game. And I thought Tom Stewart was my leader for the Norm Smith after probably for almost the first half. He was outstanding down back, wasn't he?
I thought he was terrific, and he's been that way all year. He's very solid for Geelong. But my key moment really was Martin's goal just before half time, because not only did that energise the players, it energised the coaching group. And it gave Hardwick half time to reset and get the players to focus on what their game plan was, because they went away from it and had Geelong kick straight. And this is, you know, a perennial problem throughout the whole competition. Yep. But had they kicked straight, they could have gone away with it. You know, might have been too far for Richmond to come back. So I think half time really helped Richmond as a result of Martin's goal.
Yeah, because the margin was 22 points, I think maybe 18 or 19 minutes into that second term. So you just, I was at the, I think it was the prelim last year, wasn't it, where the Cats had a similar lead, and you went in at half time thinking, how can Richmond get back into it? And I think they got back into it in a couple of minutes last year in that prelim. And you're right. Martin's goal, as you know, Bob, late in 71 when Leon Rice kicked the goal just before three-quarter time, and suddenly you're six or so points closer and you just think, oh, hang on, it's not that bad now. I mean, we've been down, 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 and suddenly you look up and go, geez, a couple of goals isn't much.
Oh, absolutely. And I've been upfront about the importance of Rice's goal, because I think if we go in a three-quarter time and Leon hadn't or Ricky hadn't kicked that goal, I'm not sure that Kennedy would have say do something. He might have said a few other things. but that really did, you know, it put us, gave us a sniff, and it was vital. You know, to me, that was a critical goal. And as I referred already, I think Martin, it was the timing of Martin's goals that got to me. Mm. It was right when Richmond needed to kick away or get back in.
Yep.
It was like a scripted, and wasn't it?
Yep.
It was, yeah. And he did it with such power. You know, he has to be, I've been involved in the AFL, or BFL, AFL, for 56 years now. And I don't think I've come across a player with so much strength through his core and with that instinctive understanding of where to put the ball.
Yeah, right.
He's
big call, isn't it?
When the last goal he kicked wasn't a fluke. He was thinking ahead of the play there, and when the Geelong player handballed, supposedly to his teammate running next to him, Martin just ran between the two of them, took the handball from him, turned and bang. Didn't look at the goals, just kicked it. That was spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, and it really should go down in some sort of video as to reading ahead of the play, thinking ahead of the play, constantly being in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's what he does, and he does it brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, does he what? You touched on the poor goal-kicking at Geelong earlier. I really felt that was what kept Richmond in the game in that first half. I mean, they really should have been probably a couple more goals up leading into halftime. And as you say, that may have been a bridge too far for them to cross over had that been the case. But it's another game where the poor kicking has come back to haunt them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, Bob, you've been in a grand final rooms at half time or even three quarter time when you're behind and you think, you know, it's a battle ahead and it's tough going. How do you change the vibe in the room at half time? How do you reckon Hardwick would have gone about that?
Well, I think that with full time coaches these days, the address is radically different. It was pretty much very emotive and, you know, really, really fired up stuff in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you at half time in 71, there was no noise.
Yeah.
No one spoke to anybody. Yeah. It was dead silent. And a few of us were wondering who was going to be taken off, me included. And three quarter time, it was almost as if Kanga had suggested that we couldn't win, so let's do something to be able to hold our heads up. Well, that wouldn't have been Hardwick's approach. His approach would have been quiet, directly, eye to eye, conversation, so he gets feedback from his leadership group, and just pointing out on a whiteboard or sorts, even a little bit of a vision, which they have the privilege of having these days, to actually say, listen, this is the state of the game. This is what we have to do. We'll jiggle it a little bit. And one of the things they did in the first half, and they continued it throughout the game, it's been talked about, and that is the fact that they keep pushing the ball forward. And the number of times, and Edwards was the best at it for Richmond, kicking the ball off the ground towards open space or towards the goals, knocking it out of stoppages. And I think if you have a look at the replay, there were not that many stoppages because it was a day where the side that could get the ball forward more than the other side, particularly into space, really had an advantage. And when you've got the likes of Short and Pickett, Lambert, Baker, Rioli, Rioli didn't do much, but what he did was clever. Baker was terrific, of course.
Yeah.
And so I think that Richmond took the ascendancy in the third quarter. They came out and the body language was different. Geelong came out and it was almost as if they were hoping.
Yeah. Yeah, which when you're in front by 15 points at half time, you shouldn't have that attitude, should you? So, what did you make? 4-goal 2-1-goal 3 third quarter by Richmond, and suddenly they're in front at three-quarter time by a couple of points. What did you make of that third term, mate?
Yeah, well, as we touched on, Richmond's intent definitely shifted and came out firing, and that definitely evened up the contest, which was reflective in the scoreboard. There was a couple of opportunities for both sides to get a bit of a break. There's Geelong in particular had misses from Stanley and Hawkins, where he'd taken that or got that the ball on a set shot in the pocket and just rushed around on a curve kick and or a kick around the corner, and he's missed it. And had he slotted that, that would have made things look a little bit different, I think. And even on the flip side of that, Shane Edwards running in towards goal missed an absolute soda, and that would have put the Tigers in good stead leading into three-quarter time as well. So, it was definitely Richmond's quarter to even it back up, but it was still anyone's game to three-quarter time. So even though Richmond were on top for the third quarter, it could have gone either way. So, it was definitely intriguing to see how the last quarter was going to play out.
And it gets to that pivotal moment. Yet another injury. I'm trying to think who it was now, but
Sam Simpson.
Simpson, yeah. I mean, that was an ugly one. Yeah, and I thought he'd played pretty well, Simpson. And the play stops. Menengola gets a shot on goal and kicks a ripper from outside 50. And you go, okay, it's at a guess. I think it was maybe 16 points or something with about 7 or 8 minutes left. And you just thought, hang on, maybe, but. That's when, Bob, that's when the Tigers just went, nah, this is ours, and they went away.
Yes, you could see them sort of on their toes. And that goal from Menegola was an excellent kick. Mm. And I have to make mention, I must make mention of Hawkins, because I watched the pre-match and he's the warm-up on the field. And he was kicking beautifully. Every single kick went, basically went through.
Yeah, right.
But he was kicking from the 50-metre line every time. Well, that's not where he gets the ball. He gets the ball 20 to 30 metres out.
Yeah, good point.
And he misses it. And this business of marking, and just because there's no one on the mark, you play on and kick around the corner.
Mm.
Well, there are times in the game when you can do that and when you have to do it because of pressure. But he, really ought to smack himself on the bum for that, because that was a gold he just threw away. And, he didn't have anywhere near the impact in the ruck in the forward line.
No.
And they did their homework very, very well on him in that capacity. I would have put Blitzarves at full forward.
Oh, yeah.
He is such an athlete.
Yeah.
There isn't a Richmond player that could have run with him.
Yeah.
And I'd have sent Hawkins out to centre half forward and even have Dangerfield on a half forward flank and put Ablett in a forward pocket as a small forward if they were going to keep him on the ground. Nothing seemed to come from the coach's bench about player movements, whereas Richmond, they played the switcheroo, they just rolled over. If somebody went past them, they rolled over onto their opponent. But they then were able to put enormous pressure on Geelong's field kicking, which was very surprising because they just missed targets.
It was a different game. It was a different game after half time, wasn't it? They couldn't do much wrong in the second quarter, and then it's completely different in those last two.
Yes, well, Geelong was forced wide, and when they did go wide, Richmond's pressure coming in to shut off the short kick, they forced them to kick longer around the boundary, but they were kicking straight back to Geelong, Richmond's best players.
Yeah.
Instead of using 45s or laterally, they didn't seem to me, I think they lost the plot. We're talking about very, very good players. And when you lose that sense of winning, or you have you have this little niggle in your brain that says, we might lose this,
Yeah.
You're going to make mistakes.
True. Yeah. No, I agree. I think we see it a lot in grand finals, isn't it? We see a tight tussle, and then in the last few minutes, a team gets the wind up and realises the game. Oh, I can speak of Essendon in 84. They got pretty excited at three-quarter time when things started to go their way. And once you get your tail up, there's not much stopping you, and that was Richmond. They went on to win 12-9, 81 to 7-8, 50. The scoreline probably didn't do justice for the contest, because it really was a physical, interesting, dramatic game, but the Tigers cemented their greatness, no doubt. We'll talk about that in a sec. Just some guys that played well. For the Tigers, you had Shane Edwards, had 27 disposals. Jaden Short was fantastic. He had 25, and I think he gained about 14,000 metres. He was pretty good. Dusty Martin, who we know got the Norm Smith, he had 21 and four goals in a low-scoring game. That's a match-winning performance in itself. Cochin was good. Graham, Bolt, yeah, the list goes on. There's so many. Baker, as you say, you don't look at the stats and go, wow, but he just seemed to have a bit of impact, didn't he? And for the Cats, Mitch Duncan was... Stewart went out of it after half-time, but Mitch Duncan was probably their most consistent player, I think, across the game. I mean, Stanley had a crack, but I thought Thingo Ruckman for the Tigers... Yeah, Nan Gervis. I'll ask you about him in a sec, Bob. But yes, I thought he was great for the Tigers. Just firstly, you mate, what did you make of the better players for both sides?
Yeah, we said last week that Richmond had both teams last week in the prelims had a good even spread of contributors, and the team that came out on Saturday had an even spread of contributors, but they didn't have really, or they might have had maybe one or two passengers, but they still would have had some sort of say in the outcome, whereas I feel like Geelong had a few more there and just had sort of so-so games. So I think that was, you pretty much touched on any specific players that I would have mentioned, but yeah, in a general sense, I feel that's a fair indication of how and why it played out the way it did.
Yeah. Just your thoughts, Bob, on Nan Gervis's game. We know what Brisbane did with Clark Keating during their great run. He just turned it on when it mattered most. What did you think of Big Toby's game on the biggest stage?
Yeah, I thought that Nan Gervis and Stanley, I thought they squared it up in the first half.
Yep.
But after half time, Nan Gervis just his sheer bulk. And I think the fact that the smalls or the mids and the players coming off half back, he seemed to find another breath, and I think was very, very important around the ground. It's interesting when you talk about the better players. You've asked me about the ruck. I think Richmond, at the end of the day, won in the ruck.
Yeah.
I think they won in the mids, and that's basically where the game starts and finishes.
Yeah.
But I really felt that Edwards, I would have given three votes to.
Yeah, okay.
Because of his impact in the first half.
Yeah.
And then he continued with that in the second half. 27 possessions in a short game is a good effort.
Yeah.
Tiny Short.
Yeah.
Short by nature, but also in stature. I thought he was terrific. He just got, he's got quick feet. And, yep, you know, he seems to get himself in good positions. One player we haven't mentioned is Soldo. You know, in the first half,
yeah,
I thought he was found a bit wanting. But the second half, he really came into his own. I have to give a pat on the back to Taylor from Geelong,
yep,
because he didn't do a lot, but Lynch didn't either.
No.
And that was Taylor's job, was to take Lynch out of the game. Rewald, question mark again.
Mm.
Not much. Without Martin, they don't win. It's as simple. But
I agree.
They were their half back line, and the defensive work in the forward line really made a huge difference. And Geelong was just under too much pressure in the second half. They couldn't find a free player who could then find a free player.
Yeah.
They find one, yeah. but the next one had to kick to a contest.
Yeah.
And that was because Richmond really worked hard to get behind the ball and to stop them finding, you know, that those avenues or the lanes towards forwards.
Yeah, pretty good summary, I reckon. Hey, I don't know if you blokes have been across the news today, but we know I love the Norm Smith medals and written a book on it, and I'm fascinated by the Norm Smith medal. But the voting went this way. There's five voters, and I'll come back to this in a sec, but the votes were unanimous. Dustin Martin, best on ground by all five voters. So he got 15 votes. Jaden Short got 6, and I'll put a little asterisk near that, and I'll tell you why in a sec. Jaden Short got 6. Shane Edwards got 4. Mitch Duncan got 3. And Nathan Broad, with another asterisk, gets 2. Now, I went, okay, well, if Lee Matthews is saying that, then he must have played an all right game. But then I read today that Lee, of all people on the planet to make a mistake on grand final day, the last one you would think would be Lee, but as the chairperson of the five selectors, he scribbled down his vote card and he gave the two votes to Nathan Broad, and then it was only after the game, because I think he was commentating on radio, and he gave votes there, and he gave Jaden Short the two votes in his radio one, and someone said, hang on, that's different to your Norm Smith one, and he said, is it? And it turns out he'd accidentally put Broad instead of Short, so we're lucky Martin won by a lot, because Short should have finished on 8 votes and Broad would have had none, so he was still second either way, but if it had come down to a vote or two, Lee might have been a bit embarrassed. I don't know if you blokes had heard that or not, but I just thought that's of all the people that happened to, I wouldn't have thought Lee would make a mistake like that.
No, I actually heard Barney on radio this morning, he said, I don't understand why I would have put Broad in there. He said, and then he said, didn't I put Short in? He'd still forgotten this morning. Couldn't work it out. But he's, you know, he's a bit like that. He said, yeah, I had a lot going through my mind, and, you know, at the end of the game, you've got to write 3 names down. I wrote down the 3 names I thought were the best players. And I got one wrong.
Yeah, and you're not going to question Lee anyway, are you? You're not going to say you're sure about that, Lee, are you? You're just going to let him... I tell you one funny quote, that I saw today. Lee, unlike American sports, we don't probably... The big names in our game don't say, I was the best player or I was that good. They let other people say that. And Lee's never... I've never heard him come out and say, yeah, I thought I'm the best player or any of that sort of stuff. But there's a very, very interesting quote... today, I can't find it, but it said, it was basically Lee saying, I'm not sure where he said it on radio or where it was, but he said, if I don't always agree with people being compared to me as the greatest of all time, but I'm happy to have Dustin Martin be compared to me. So it was a big statement from Lee to come out and say that, I thought, because we don't get that in our game like America, really, that we sort of play you don't even really hear Carey or someone come out and say, oh, I thought I was the best. But for Lee to say that was the Michael Jordan quote, I reckon. He's in the discussion.
Yeah. Australians like their champions humble, don't they? Otherwise they get a bit tarred and feathered publicly. So, but look, I think Lethal's earned the right to go that way now, and he's probably too old to care. So, to be compared to Dusty.
Yeah, we're not saying you're old or anything, Bob. Don't worry.
Younger than me.
Yeah, that's true. Well, just one on that, Bob. You got to play a few years with the great Lee Matthews, and you've said that Dusty might be the best you've seen in a similar sort of impactful way. So, just comparing the two, what are the similarities or differences, mate?
The power in their legs. The natural football mouse, the lack of fear, and the impact they have every time they get the ball. And if they The only difference I see is that Lee ran in a straight line, and if an opponent was in the road, well, that was bad luck.
Yeah.
And he just kept going, but they didn't lose their feet, and they don't lose their feet.
Yeah.
And that I think it's very difficult to separate them because we're playing in different eras,
yeah,
under different rules, with line markings and all sorts of things. Mm. And processes, sick of the word processes, but Dusty Martin. Dusty doesn't do a lot of defensive work.
No.
And when he gets the ball, on most occasions, there's no opponent anywhere near him.
Yeah.
He just has this gift of getting into the right places. And if you've got a bloke like that, and you've got Riewoldt, who was well down, Lynch, who was well down, they had to find someone, and I just sensed Martin said to himself, "I've got to do something here.
Yeah,
I've got to impose myself on this game.
Yeah,
because we didn't come here to lose.
Yeah, and that's what the great ones do, isn't it?
And as soon as he did it, and all his teammates ran to him.
Yeah,
that made him even stronger in his will.
Yeah. It was like he ripped the Superman, the suit off and revealed the Superman cape and just took it away. And you're right with the movement thing, Bob. I don't know if you noticed this in the last quarter, just probably after Amenigola's goal, in those next few bits of play, there's a couple of stoppages and just touching on what Bob said about he was on the move, Dusty, and he was just, you're right, so many times he created so much energy around the contest. And then there's a couple of stoppages up Geelong's end in that last quarter, and I was looking for who was the guy on the move for the Cats, and there was none. Like, they were all flat-footed. Like, I would have thought, and you're right, danger was there. He just couldn't get into it on the night, and he was the sort of guy that you expected to just be on the move. Even if he didn't get the ball, you'd think he would have just tried to burst through and rove it. And I just thought, oh dear, something's not right here, because no one, Gazza, anyone was really, the feet weren't moving in a couple of those throw-ins or bounce throw-ups late in the game.
Yeah, I think at the end of the game, the breeze had gone out of the windsock a little bit, and yeah, and the Tigers are definitely up and about, and just that last goal by Dusty as well, just to seal it off. And every time he went near it, something happened. So, and it just made him stand a bit taller, didn't he? Gave him a bit of a belief when they needed it. And that it looked like when they were down and out throughout the game, Dusty sprung up, did something, and that got them belief again. So, I think the Cats were up and about up until three-quarter time, and they could feel Richmond coming at them, and unfortunately their best wasn't good enough on the day, and as I say, they're just a bit deflated towards the end, and just I think they just knew mentally that the game was beyond them by then.
So where, Bob, does it leave Geelong? Do you think they can maintain what they're doing and be back there again, or is this group I'm thinking Selwood, obviously Ablett's gone, and maybe Harry might go as well, but is Selwood and Hawkins and these guys, do they get another chance to win a premiership, or have they hit the wall?
I don't think they've hit the wall, because they've been very good for a long time. It really does come down, if you go through the history of grand finals, it comes down to the side that has one or two players who can turn the game.
Yep.
And Richmond had Martin. Geelong, well, Ablett, there's no way he could do any defensive work, and he would normally be on the move in the forward line and boundary throw-ins and stoppages. That's where he gets his sneaky goals from.
Yep.
So they were minus a player there, and I'm surprised that he was still on the ground for his own benefit, let alone his team's benefit. But I think right across the ground, players who were up and about in the first half in particular, just dropped off, because I think they felt that there weren't enough of them. They didn't have enough mates to support them.
Mm.
It was one against two or three, a fair bit in the second half.
Mm. Yeah. And I think if the Cats can pluck a Jeremy Cameron or a couple of the other players that they might be getting, they might be able to stay up there again and again and again. But what are your thoughts, though, on where the Cats are at after that game? Do they bounce back?
They're still a quality side. Whether they make another grand final next year, that remains to be seen, obviously. The question mark's over Harry Taylor, I think. Does he go on next year? Obviously, Gary Ablett's not going on. Selwood's starting to get into his twilight years, but he's still got a fair amount to offer there. Obviously, Tom Hawkins will go on for a couple of years. He's not sort of travelling down the ground too much. He's quite happy plonked in that goal square leading out, which is not bad to see, you know, from a traditionalist point of view, seeing a full forward just come out of the goal square every now and then. And if they get Jezza Cameron, look, they're well primed to have another hit at it. I think what they will be lacking is that quality key defender if Harry Taylor goes. I think that'll be the main one. Like, Lockie Henderson has played out of his skin this year. Yes. As we've touched on in previous episodes, it's hard to think that he was delisted and re-rookied this year. So, yeah, he's been a revelation is probably not the right word, because we know what he's been able to do in the past. But, yeah, the fact that he's been able to play as well as he has been really good for them. So, yeah, for me, they'll probably want to just get a bit more midfield depth. I'd suggest they would be looking at another small forward too. So, there's occasions where they're not going so well, their small forwards tend to disappear a bit. So,
yeah, Gary Rowan probably had a grand final to forget. And who's the Bulldogs bloke? Dalhouse, he was
all right for the first half, but yeah, faded in the second.
Yeah, so you're right. Whereas Richmond's are the ones we're talking about as being some of the best players on the field. So that says plenty, doesn't it? Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. I think the trade period's going to tell us a few things. If they land Jezza Cameron, I think the Cats are still right in the mix, obviously. But we forget Selwood played through the whole final series with a broken thumb or finger, or finger, wasn't it? So amazing, Darren Mullane like to just play on through pain like that. But and Dangerfield may never play a bad game like that one again. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully they don't do what Adelaide did and it just, you know, wrecks them mentally. That'll be the real interesting thing next year, to see how they come back from that.
I think it's going to give them a boost, personally. The likes of Dangerfield, you know, his class. Not sure how important Jeremy Cameron is going to be to them, because he's going to have to fit in with their game style. Whether they play him as a wingman. Or at centre-half forward, that'll be interesting. But I think that the likes of Parfitt, he's going to have to improve. Dalhouse is going to have to improve. I mean, Henderson's getting on. I believe that just because of the list reduction, that Harry Taylor has probably played his last game.
Yep.
Which is sad, because he's been such a great stalwart for them.
Yeah.
Without Ablett, who gave them that, you know, amazing skill, his absence is going to be hard to fill. And that's why I think what you said, they need a very good, quick forward who has goal smarts. But I agree with Owen that they need someone who's really tough down back.
Yep.
Somebody who can crunch into packs and, you know, split the packs open to allow the rest of their side, their back half, to take advantage of that. I'd like to see them toughen up. And I'm not saying they're weak by any means, but some of them didn't put their hand up.
Yeah, that sounds like what they need is that Richmond defender that was running around going okay for the Tigers, Big Bolter, who got his first flag with the club this year, filling in, well, not filling in, but taking over from Alex Rance and making it the place his own. And, it might be the sort of bloke that... I know Geelong are after Sean Higgins too. If they get him, there's a good ball user to bring... I know he's older now in terms of footy use, but he might just add that touch of class they need going forward to help Mitch Duncan and a couple of those guys out. So it'll be interesting how that plays out. The Tigers now enter the discussion as one of the all-time great teams. Again, what's your thoughts, first of all, on where they rank from the great teams you've seen? We've seen Geelong and Hawthorn and Brisbane and going back, the likes of Carlton and other clubs like and Hawks in the 80s and those sort of teams. Where do you see the Tigers now? I think they're right in the discussion.
Absolutely. Well, love them or hate them, they're definitely in the discussion. I mean, you can't write a team off that's had three flags in 4 years and they made a prelim in one of the years that they didn't win a flag. So yeah. Definitely dynasty era for Richmond. And tell you what, I've got far too many Richmond supporter friends in my circle of friends, and they are enjoying it very much so.
And fair enough, they've had some shocking years for most of my life, and they are as good as anyone going around. Bob, what's your thought on where Richmond now sit amongst the pantheon of great teams?
Oh, there's no question that they're right up in that top three to four clubs. One of the critical issues is that they've got their administrative affairs in order.
Mm.
And with Gail as the CEO, and they have a very polished president in Peggy.
Yeah.
They have a good coach who's proven now. And they're a club that will attract players. Players want to go and play for those sorts of clubs.
Yeah.
And I think if you go through the other dynasties, that you'll find that. So it's easier to get players into your club, which makes it more competitive for spots. And that's the luxury that Richmond has had pretty much all year. And there are a lot of very good players who missed out on playing. So I think their future's very bright. They'll certainly come out favourites for next year.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd be able to back them at the moment.
No, that's right. I think.
I'm not a betting man.
Yeah, I think they'll be just pouring the bronze into the mould of Dusty Martin to pop out the front of Punt Road too, alongside Jack Dyer. It'll be a fight between him and Dimmer Hardwick to see who gets the first statue up at Punt Road or across the ground at the MCG, because what they've done. And maybe it's Brendan Gale, because I think, what was it, a decade ago or something, he said, we'll win three flags, we'll have 75,000 plus members, we won't have any issues with money, and et cetera, et cetera. And he's ticked them all off and some over. We get so many five-year plans over the journey that become 30-year plans, and he's been able to turn a five-year plan into exactly what he said. So I reckon he's be worth a little bit of money at the moment, Big Benny. Pretty amazing what he and Peggy and everyone else behind the scenes. But yeah, just his.
I think there's already talk that we might find him at the AFL, not too far away.
I'd very much love that. I have my issues with certain decisions being made Head House, and I think I'd like to see Benny in there. He's done everything else. He was Players Association CEO, wasn't he? That's the first time I thought, oh, geez, you're more than just a ruckman for Richmond who played okay in the early 90s. You're actually something about you. You've just got this leadership. And I know Caroline Wilson wrote through the year that Richmond lacked leaders, which is getting a bit of a run now, because I think that was a bit over the top. But I think she might be eating, and she's a Richmond person herself, Caroline, but she might be eating a little bit of humble pie, hopefully, over that one, because I don't think there's many people in the footy industry that don't want to learn off the people at Richmond at the moment. That's why Essendon's tried to steal half their off-field staff to try and learn something, but we haven't quite worked it out yet. Pretty amazing stuff. Great grand final, as we said. Oh, one more thing for us regional Victorian footy lovers. My favourite thing about the Sunday after the grand final is you get your Herald Sun and your Age, and you sit down and you pretty much spend the whole day going through the dozens and dozens of pages of looking back over the game and analysing it. And because it was a late game, I go pick up my Herald Sun this morning, and not one picture or mention from the game, because it was too late when it finished for them to actually print them and send them out to us regional people. So what a massive letdown that part of it is too, you know. It's just nothing. Sorry, mate.
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, Bobby's gone. We would try and get him back, but... we may not have any luck. We'll see. But pretty good insight from Bob, I reckon, there over the grand final. Mate, did you have anything else on the game itself?
Yeah, the only other thing I had written down is the other injuries. So we touched on at the very start how brutal the game was and the carnage and whatnot. So we didn't touch on Hawley's torn calf, which he got in the first quarter, apparently. He thought he was done for the game and played through. There was one I noticed on a couple of social media areas that Brennan Parfitt may have been playing with a busted thumb as well. I don't think that's come up in broader discussions, but I have seen that in multiple areas being said that he played with a busted thumb, so that might account for his poor game as well, because he played pretty well in the prelim from memory.
Yeah, he was hampered a bit during the game. A few times you could see him just at the back of the screen, just playing, just sort of grimacing with his hand, so you knew something wasn't right there. And there was a few times he was in the right spots, and he just obviously couldn't clean grab it. So you must be right. There was obviously some issue there. And you wouldn't have known Selwood had a broken finger, would you? Because he just played through it. And yeah, I heard that about Hooley this morning, and I think he said. Words to the effect that, I thought my day was done in the first quarter, and then Dimmer said, mate, we need you to do this because Vlosten's off the field. So he just went, okay. Now, I don't know how you try and run through a hamstring injury, but he did it, and none of us knew until after the game. So pretty gutsy stuff. And even Ablett, there's probably been a lot of criticism, and I've been in that category myself, just thinking, gee, he's not the physical bloke that he was over the last, since he did his shoulder a few years back, and he just isn't, he's still a smart player who can do handy things, but he probably isn't, the physical beast that he was, and maybe not that Selwood bullocking type. But so it surprised me that he stayed out there, and it just gave me a newfound respect for his mindset that he just willed himself to do it, even though his impact was, it was hit and miss, and when he did hit, it was brilliant. A couple of those brilliant handballs and things, but just the fact that he played that game out, I thought, really showed his mental fortitude as well.
Yeah, I had a similar thought process as well. I think he's pretty famous for not wanting painkillers. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Pretty sure he went into the rooms and said, give me everything you have.
And then again, I think a quarter later, wasn't it, he went back down. Funny stuff. But great effort by him. And my cousin worked with him a bit up at the Suns when he was up there, and he just said he's just so competitive, whether it's trying to throw a basketball over a fence, behind a wall, he just had all these quirky games. He just had to beat you at everything he did, no matter what it was. And him and my cousin had some good little duels, I think, just killing time during the weeks up there sometimes. And he just said, yeah, he's as competitive and as anyone you'd see. And you probably, visually, it didn't look as the same as a Selwood looks when he's being competitive. But I think they had the same drive, and you can see why Geelong under the Mark Thompson years was such a good team, because they had all those blokes were trying to outdo each other at the one time. So Gazza is one of the greats. Be interesting how quickly they put him in the legend status in the Hall of Fame, but he'll have a few to fight with, like Luke Hodge and a few others, but I dare say we'll see him in there at some point. Pretty amazing career.
Yeah, and we might even... I don't think his dad's in there yet, is he? So
no, not might. That. Yeah.
And that's a touchy subject as well. Obviously, his dad's personal life comes into play there as a result of that. But we might see Gazza Jr. come in before his dad, which is interesting and a shame for different reasons entirely.
Yeah, I mean, if it's footy alone, then senior should be in. But you're right, there's a lot of other stuff off the field, unfortunately, because I think we'd all love to see him in for that reason. But yeah, you're right, junior might get in before senior, which is a fair effort when you think the pressure he must have been under when he came into his career. Mate, I think we've covered the grand final pretty well there. been tough not being able to talk about our teams much this this final episode. But have you got any local stuff for us to wrap off the year before we say our farewells?
Yeah, I got a little bit. So as I said last week, it's starting to wind down now, but there's still a few clubs bringing out some re-signing news. So Poowong, Hayfield, Druin, Morwell East, Boysdale, Bragalong, Morwell and Hillend have all announced re-signing of players. One coach's ad, so Buchan are searching for senior football, junior football and B-grade netball coaches. We've still got the draft coming up, so there's a couple of Gippsland Power boys that will be looking to be picked up in the national draft. One of them is Zach Reed, who is a Leongatha boy. There is a profile on him through the site Draft Central, who are in the interstate football and under 18 space. Moving to mid-Gippy football, so we're well aware that Yulon North have decided to disaffiliate with mid-Gippy. Mid-Gippy turned down the request to disaffiliate, so that appear will go to AFL Vic.
Okay.
So if we're going by what they did with Trafalgar, AFL Vic will, well, very well could turn over the decision to keep Yulon North into mid-Gippy, so we'll watch that with interest. Matt Stewick, who's also a Leongatha boy, 400 umpired AFL games the week before and got into his eighth grand final on the weekend, and that's five in a row as well. So, yeah, he's definitely one of the better ones out there.
Yep, and you can see he commands respect when he's on the field there, doesn't he? I thought he did a few times. He just talked his way through situations with players, and you went, yep, yeah, he's one of those ones that the players actually respect.
Yeah, you're not wrong. There was an instance I remember where Sam Menegola was just having a massive sook up and the ump didn't want to have a bar of it, but it didn't stop him from. Gibby players in the NTFL, so Nate Paredes had a day out for St Mary's, had 30 disposals and a goal. Collis brothers keep playing well for Waratah. Ryan Pendlebury, another good game for Darwin. Brett Eddy held goalless. Hold it goalless, rather, for the Wanderers, so that was unusual for them. Foster Tigers, they announced their clash jumper for next year for when they play Mirboo North. Jeez, I'm struggling to talk at the end of this. And that's predominantly a yellow jumper with a black slash, so there's no real sort of out-of-the-box thinking there, but I'm sure it will do the job when Mirboo North arrive with their black jumper and yellow slash. Moving to AFL-wise, so Sam Skinner from Maui, he's been delisted by Brisbane. Back to local, and Katani's Ron and Beryl Bambury, they've been named the WorkSafe AFL Victoria Volunteers of the Year, so big award for them. Bambury's have been a big name down at Katani Footy Club for years, and well done to them. Russell Bennett's been tapping on that keyboard for a few more articles to wind up the year. Nice piece on the Phillip Island Bulldogs, and to cap it off, a very nice piece having a chat to you about your Crimo book.
No, he did a brilliant job, shows how good a writer Russ is. He really got to the heart of what I was trying to do with Crimo, and I was wrapped with the way he approached it, and obviously pieced it together. He did a great job, so I'm very thankful of that. So if you're near the Pakenham, near the shops anywhere that way, grab your Pakenham Gazette, because bit to read on Russ always, which is leaves me for dead as a writer. Big Russ, so he's doing a good job up there. Anything else, mate?
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure he said that's the best time he's ever had talking about Hawthorn, wasn't it?
I've won. Hawks will be rad. I should be getting a commission. I think I might have signed up a couple less than people might have grown a bit of a heart for the Hawks, which is hard to imagine. So my job is done.
It is done. Very well done. Now, before we disappear for the year, we've been talking about Jezza Cameron possibly going to the Cats. It's good to see that Essendon have got an interested party in coming to the club in Jai Caldwell.
Yeah, big turnaround in a couple of weeks, isn't it? And, hasn't had a lot of senior footy under his belt, so you sort of wait and see. But from all the reports, might be the sort of player we want. And first of all, he wants to come, so that's a bonus. He just might compliment. Been a few more positive vibes lately out of the club, so that's a good thing. And if they do happen to Josh Dunkley, I know Andrew's from down Yaron Way, and be nice if we could pluck him as well. It just shows that there is still some reasons to come to Essendon, even if we're not quite close to a grand final yet. So good signs, but it's going to be an interesting few weeks now, isn't it, as we wait and see who goes where and who. I know Brad Crouch wants to go to the Saints, am I correct?
Yeah, Cocaine Crouch, he's nominated St Kilda. Wow. So.
Last one that did that was your big centre-half back.
Yeah, Cocaine Carlisle. So great to ring true together. Now, from what I've heard, he didn't time that incident very well, did he?
Nah.
And due to that point, a lot of clubs that were interested in him have dropped off, which is natural. And I do believe the deal that was put in front of him initially is somewhat reduced significantly. So St Kilda might be the only suitor now, and they've gone, well, if you want to come, we'll have you, but this is all you're getting. So I think it's a five-year deal from reports that they've offered, but the actual money that was offered originally is significantly less.
Handy pickup. I see that Brad Hill was narrowly beaten in the grand final sprint too on the weekend. So you just can't get over the line on grand final day, can you, mate?
Story of St Kilda's life, mate.
That's right. A bit of heartbreak. One of the Geelong blokes, I can't remember. Clark, was it? Jordan Clark?
Yeah, it was Jordan Clark, yes.
Pipped him at the end there. Very good. Have you covered all your local?
All the local done, yes.
Thanks to everyone who has helped Owen with snippets of advice, information throughout the season, because you've kept us for the fact that we've had no local footy basically for the whole season, to have been across it the way that Owen has been a credit to him and his go for work, but also all the people that have contacted you, mate, to just tell you bits and pieces. And we've had a few chats with people, but also just great that we've been able to hopefully provide a bit of an insight into things are still ticking along at local level. It just hasn't been action-packed in terms of games, but I think you've done a brilliant job covering all that.
Thank you, mate. Yes, and I'll echo that sentiment. Thank you to anyone and everyone who gives me a little bit of information what's going on. It's, as you say, been a very dry year for footy and nothing's really been happening. So looking forward to 2021 in that space for sure.
Definitely. Owen and I both want to thank a few people who helped us make this come together. We just talked the dribble, but then the actual pros put it to work and make it happen. So Mark Drury, big thank you to you, mate. Nick Jeremiah, your technical skills, the two of you have done a brilliant job, and this literally doesn't happen without you two. Matt Dunn for allowing us to do this. We know the paper news has been a victim of the virus situation and is packing up shop, unfortunately, because it was a positive platform that could have been a good thing in the future. It's tough times. So we thank Matt and Jane Gardner and all the ones that were involved with giving us the opportunity to bring this to the people. I know I haven't made much sense throughout the year, but I know Owen and our special guests, Bob Geddie, who we couldn't get back on, unfortunately, but a big thanks to Bob for coming on a few times this year, and all the other guests, Joey Macedi and Wow Jones and Jeff Blethyn and a couple others. Thanks, everyone, for being a part of it. We reckon we've had a bit of fun doing it. Owen's wife's rapt that this thing's over because she finally gets to see him now, which is good, and his kids. So thank you to Mrs. Carter for tolerating us. I reckon she's the hero in all this, though.
Yep, she's definitely number one. She's very much wrapped that this is winding up.
All right, that's it. Thanks, everybody. We hope you enjoyed your grand final. Let's hope there's plenty more positive news footy-wise to talk about in the weeks and months ahead. We might be back next year. We'll wait and see. We'll keep you all in the loop when we know for sure. But at the moment, farewell and well done for getting through listening to us for all of 2020.
And good luck to your club next year.
Go Bombers.
Any given Monday...